Hello, I'm Jane Crowell, the editor of Total Film, and welcome to Inside Total Film, the weekly podcast from The Smarter Movie Magazine. And today I'm joined by our news editor, Jordan Farley.
Hello.
Hello. And our reviews editor, Matthew Leyland.
Hello.
And we're in a room together, guys.
Yay.
It's a rare occurrence.
It's so rare that we have IRL. To celebrate this. I can reach out and touch you.
Please don't. I'll be contacting HR.
We do the pod first.
Indeed. Okay, so this week we are rating Moon Knight with spoilers. And Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness, without spoilers. So check the menu for where you want to join us if you're not fully up to date with Oscar Isaac and his accents. But before we get onto those two, we should discuss a big trailer that dropped for a long-awaited sequel. What was that, guys? You went to see this. There were blue drinks. There was blue food. What was it?
Avatar, The Way of Water.
The Way of Water.
Very exciting. 13 years in the making, incredibly. I can't believe it's here.
Almost. I know.
I can't believe it's a real thing.
I know. Like, it feels like a parallel universe that it's actually coming out.
Yeah. I wouldn't have been surprised if they just went, psych, it's not real. No. We haven't been doing anything all this time. But yeah, very exciting. Interestingly, they put on a screening specifically for the trailer of this film for journalists, which is
That's
very
how big
rare.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think the last time I can remember that happening was The Force Awakens, which, you know, was a number of years ago at this point. So yeah, I tootled along to Leicester Square to the Odeon there, which has a James Cameron approved projector, a Dolby projector there.
Yes, it has to be the right one, doesn't it, for old Jimbo. Yep.
Best possible projection of that trailer. Blue drinks before, some delicious food. Not going to complain about that.
Was it blue food, though?
It was sort of blue. It was like it was Vietnamese rolls, which I guess are a bit transparent. So they look a bit
watery.
Like they look a bit like they could have come from Pandora. But yeah, the main event, of course, was the trailer itself, which isn't available yet, obviously, unless it's only going to be shown before screenings of Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. So you have to go along to a cinema for now if you want to see this.
Old school.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a couple of minutes long. It is more of a taster of what to expect than setting up anything particular to do with the story.
So you're not getting any plot details there, just a sense, a vibe of what it is.
None at all, yeah. There is one line of dialogue in the whole thing. The rest is all just beautiful shots of incredible Pandoran vistas. A lot of cool-looking underwater shots, obviously. The Way of Water, this is going to be a big thing in the sequel. They're going to an underwater kingdom almost, I guess.
And Cameron does love his water, you know, Titanic. Oh,
yeah. Abyss.
Yeah, the abyss.
Plenty of experience underwater. I have to say, I was pretty much blown away by it. I thought it looked astonishing. Avatar itself obviously looked amazing back in 2009. It feels like there's been some big leaps technologically. I saw a few people online saying it doesn't look that different. Go back and watch Avatar and compare to what you've just seen. It looks very different. I thought it looked amazing. It's a little bit hard to tell how much we're seeing that's new. That's the only thing I would say, because there's a lot of blue faces. And I'm not entirely, because I haven't watched the first film in a long time.
Yes.
I'm not entirely clear.
Could you spot Kate Winslet?
Well, yeah, this is what I was going to say. I'm not sure if I've seen Kate Winslet or not. I could have done. I can't really tell you. I definitely saw Jake Sully, and I definitely saw N'Tiri, and I definitely saw one of their kids, who appears to be like half human or something and has like a face mask. I'm not entirely sure what's going on there. But yeah, it's kind of what you would expect, but at the same time did still blow me away. It looked astonishing. Lots of beautiful creatures, lots of beautiful backdrops. Looked just completely flawless. They clearly operate on another level in terms of what they're doing with the visual effects in this film. And that's just from a minute and a half of footage, which I watched three times in a row. It was that good.
Did you, Matthew?
No, because I only saw it before, they showed it before the screening of Doctor Strange in the IMAX cinema, so I only saw it the once.
And did you have to wear your 3D glasses?
Yes. But
the
3D is pretty astonishing.
Do you feel like the 3D has progressed? I mean, from we used to watch some quite ropey 3Ds. I'm thinking of Clash of the Titans and, you know, when it's like that retrospective 3D and it's quite crappy.
Yeah.
Was this like another level?
Oh, yeah, so clear and, such a great sense of depth. And just imposing scale as well. So, yeah, it did look really impressive.
Mm.
Yeah, it really reminded me what was so special about the 3D in Avatar. The sense that it's felt like a window into another world, as opposed to, you know, the gimmicky thing of having things hurled at you. Like, this was very much you were being absorbed into Pandora straight away. I'm really hyped to see it in 3D, actually. I haven't seen a 3D film, I think, since Gemini Man. Yeah. It's the last one I saw, and that was a few years ago now. Not an entirely successful use of 3D either, I would say.
No.
I don't think anyone still has done it as successfully as Cameron did with Avatar. So it's good to see the master return and hopefully school a few filmmakers in the process.
Yeah. And they're going to have to be very clean with those glasses now in the cinemas, aren't they? With our COVID-averse and sort of our new things. It's going to be a lot of wiping. You used to just jam on the glasses that the bloke in front had and off
Who
you
cares?
Go.
Yeah.
But now...
Everyone will be bringing their own sanitizers.
I think maybe that's the way forward. And I think Avatar should like market that. They should sell glasses, your own pair that you take and they're sanitary. There you go, James Cameron, if you'd like that one. I'm open to offers on like a tie-in. We could do a total film Avatar 3D glasses. You mentioned, Jordan, there, The Force Awakens. Another trailer dropped as well yesterday that was pretty spectacular. What was that?
That was Obi-Wan Kenobi, the upcoming Disney Plus series.
And the cover of our current issue.
Absolutely. Very exciting.
So this is the first proper trailer we've seen. We've seen teasers before now, but this is the first proper trailer. What context are we getting in this one that we weren't getting before?
Well, we're getting a first hint of Darth Vader, which I think is the most
exciting
thing.
And all of his kits that he's being put on him.
Exactly. I love the little like droid hand coming in and attaching his little control panel. Like, awesome. Just so cool. So Star Wars-y. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the big thing about this show, right? Seeing Obi-Wan confront Vader. Again.
Yes. But let's talk about that, because in A New Hope, they met and there was the intimation that they haven't seen each other since, you know, the incident that split them so irrevocably. Mm. So how are they going to sort that out, Matthew Leyland?
A lot of retconning, I think. Yeah, I think there's going to be some few choice lines of dialogue to explain that one away, because, yeah, you very much get the sense when he says, when we last met, I was the learner, you were the master. Mm. So either he's giving away that he's going to lose again to Obi-Wan in this series, which is a bit of a spoiler.
Or that Obi-Wan drops some class in the middle of there. Like, listen, I think you should hold your saber a little differently, because then you might win. And then that will explain why he was still the teacher and he was still the learner the previous time. But we are going to have to sort of re-engineer this, because Kathleen Kennedy has promised fisticuffs, hasn't she?
The rematch of the century.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Big words.
They can't renege on that, can they? So got to have it. But
And also we're seeing a lot more of, like, you know, the towns that we didn't see before. So, like, what we're used to with Kenobi is desert in this era, that he's sort of living in the desert with the sand people and the Jawas. But now we're going to see this sort of Blade Runner-esque sort of townscape.
Out and about,
Does that excite you?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. Because we've had so much desert in the Boba Fett series and in The Mandalorian, so it's time for something a bit different, you know, environment.
Bit of neon light.
Yeah, some bit of neon, crowds, rain.
The first time I saw that, I assumed that was just Coruscant again, but apparently it's Dayu, which is a whole new planet, which is quite exciting. It feels like a while since we've seen a completely new place. Although I guess we did see that one new place in the Book of Boba Fett that the Mandalorian popped along to.
Yeah.
That was quite cool. But yeah, this looked really exciting. I love like urban spaces in Star Wars, just because, as you say, we're so used to Tatooine and desert planets and forest planets and forest moons and all this stuff. Nice to see built up cities. That's what was so
and all
cool.
The weird people that inhabit those cities as well. That's what I'm hoping for, because I, you know, the cantina is one of my favorite scenes in A New Hope, so I'm hoping for a lot more of that action. I love sort of seedy folk that are hanging out in different towns. That's what I'm looking forward to. What about, let's also discuss who is also on the trail of Obi-Wan. We've got a fearsome woman here, haven't we?
Yeah.
She looks great.
Inquisitor Reva, played by Moses Ingram. Yeah, she very much likes she's going to be one of the driving forces of this show, actually, on Obi-Wan's tail for much of the series, it seems like it's going to be, while Vader waits in the wings, ready to strike.
Yeah,
She looks intimidating. The Inquisitors, if you haven't watched any animated series, are basically Jedi hunters. They're sort of tasked by Vader to wipe out the remaining Jedi across the galaxy. So their whole purpose is to kill people like Obi-Wan. They're sort of Sith. They have Sith abilities. I don't know if they are technically Sith. Maybe Matthew can...
I don't think so. Because they're only allowed to be two, aren't they? Sith,
exactly,
that's the big rule. They follow the rules.
And there's bloody
maybe they're not. Maybe they're rule breakers.
But she looks great. We get a good look at her in this trailer. And she looks intimidating, to say the least.
Yeah. And who else might we be seeing in this that is sort of a blast from the past?
It was Joel Edgerton. He's reprising his role as Uncle Owen from the prequels. There wasn't much of him in the prequels, but hopefully he'll get a bit more to do here. And he's going to be clashing with Obi-Wan over Luke's future from the looks of things.
We've got some de-aging on the face going on there, haven't we? Yeah, a little bit of de-aging. So that's, hope that's not Uncanny Valley, because that's something that youthful, like, de-aging of people can sometimes be really jarring, can't it? And weird.
Yeah.
You know, the Adam Project, for example, with Catherine Keener did not work. But this looks like it's not in the Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I didn't even notice any de-aging. So either...
You just thought that Joel Edgerton looks really fresh. Just his well-slept.
I think he's a good-looking man. I think he just takes good care of himself, you know? But yeah, I'm very excited to see Uncle Owen back.
Yeah. And Aunt Beru should be in there as well.
I like him... berating Obi-Wan for messing up Anakin's training as well. Yeah. Very funny.
Everyone's always reminding him, aren't they?
Yeah. And I really hope there's going to be some of that, you know, like that weird drink she gives people in their house.
Oh, the blue milk.
I want some more of that.
Yeah.
But obviously I don't want to see where it's milked from again, ever, because that haunted my dreams.
You don't want a green milk in The Last Jedi situation. No, thank
you. You didn't enjoy that scene.
No, I did not. Okay, so that is incoming. If you haven't read the new issue, it does have everything you need to know, well, that we can find out about Obi-Wan Kenobi, and it will be starting very soon. We're super excited. Okay, so before that comes along, let's like settle down and think about the next exciting installment of another franchise.
I did what I had to do. To protect our world.
You cannot control everything, Strange. You opened the doorway between universes. And we don't know who or what will walk through it.
Wanda, what do you know about the multiverse?
Viz had his theories. He believed it was dangerous.
He was right.
So this is Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness. Matthew, are you able to surmise what this is about?
Well, it's madness. I mean, it's
multiverses and it's madness.
Yeah. It's actually quite a straightforward linear plot, really, when you boil it down. It's there's a new character, America Chavez, who is being pursued by a demonic force. And she kind of comes into contact with Doctor Strange. He basically rescues her from a giant eyeball that's thrashing around the city. And his mission basically is to protect her from this demonic force. He enlists Elizabeth Olsen's Scarlet Witch to help him. But then, there's lots of traveling through different planes of existence through the multiverse.
And this is very much against the rules.
Yeah, because as we saw in Spider-Man No Way Home, incursions kind of have consequences. So... yeah, he has to be careful what he does. And he does get into quite a lot of bother at various points.
So without spoilers, obviously, we don't want to spoil this for anyone. Mm. Is this a good next step for Marvel? And where does it take us? Then where does it lead us on to?
Well, that's getting into without spoilers. I wouldn't say it's an essential Marvel movie. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I mean, it's got Sam Raimi, who's obviously launched the original Spider-Man movies with Tobey Maguire. So he's back in the Marvel fold, which is exciting to see. There's some significant character developments, which I can't really get into, but I wouldn't say it is like one of the essential entries in the canon.
But,
as such.
Jordan, essential in that you need to see it in order to plot your way to the next film that comes out.
I mean, that's the case with most Marvel films, isn't it, at this point, it seems. I think the interesting thing about this one, if you're one of the Marvel loyal, is that it's not only a sequel to 2016's Doctor Strange, it's a sequel to WandaVision.
Yes.
It's a sequel to Spider-Man No Way Home. It's very much building on things that happened in those films. It's a sort of tangential sequel to Loki and things that happened at the end of that show. So it very much rewards you if you've been keeping up with everything. You'll understand what's going on. I think it does a good enough job that you'll be able to keep up if you aren't up to date. But I would say I would highly recommend watching at least Doctor Strange, obviously, and WandaVision. So
because obviously we saw Doctor Strange, didn't we, when Wanda was in her cabin in the woods. He appeared to her.
Well, we don't see him, although there is a sort of school of thought that you see his shadow.
I feel like I did see him, or have I just imagined that? Yeah, yes, the Mandela effect.
Spell.
Well, this is a bit of an aside, but I asked Benedict Cumberbatch when I interviewed him for our Doctor Strange feature if he was ever supposed to appear in WandaVision, and he said no, basically. He said there was a bit of talk about it, and then, but it never reached the point where he was, you know, booking in days to go and film this or anything like that. So there might have been a
but he might have just been total Andrew Garfield in it. And just, we can't believe any of them, can we?
They're all liars.
They are all just total liars.
I would slightly disagree with Matthew in the sense that I think this is probably the sort of biggest MCU film beyond Spider-Man at this point, because it's this collision of so many characters, and it's this journey into the multiverse, which is obviously going to be a big thing for the MCU going forward. I'm sure it will be developed in things like Ant-Man, because we're going to see characters like Kang in that show. So for that reason, it did feel like it was going to be a big key to unlocking what Marvel is going to be going forward, because I don't think they're going to be leaving the multiverse behind anytime soon. But I would agree with Matthew in the sense that it was just a bit more of a sort of romp than I was expecting. Like, it was just, it wasn't like...
Because the trailer's quite dark, and it's sort of about sort of like the consequence of going into multiverses. But
the trailer's got a 15 certificate, where the film has got a 12A certificate.
How? Why? Explain, Matthew.
Well, the BBFC said it's about context, where you're seeing like the kind of scary images out of context in the trailer, so having them all piled up together made it a 15. But in the context of the movie, it's more suitable for families.
I mean, because I certainly, having watched the trailer, I didn't see the film because I was stuck in Spain, because EasyJet didn't want to bring me home, and I didn't get home in time for this.
You're very saw it though in a different universe.
I was on my own multiverse and a different continent and a different plane, but literally plane.
No,
see what I did there. But but yes, for me the trailer seemed like it would be a dark film. But you're saying it's actually quite sort of actiony, rompy. Funny. I mean, is it funny?
I mean, romp may be the wrong word. I guess what I was trying to imply is that it's maybe a bit more standalone than I was expecting. It is a little bit scary, I would say. There are some effective jump scares. Yeah, definitely. And it is actually, I would say, surprisingly violent. Marvel has often pulled its punches when it comes to people being hurt in these films, but you see quite a lot of fairly graphic violence in this film, which I was really surprised by. Probably shouldn't have been, given the fact that, you know, Sam Raimi is at the helm of this and helped steward the script. So that took me by surprise that Marvel were willing to go there. Yeah, in a great way. I would say one of the most effective sequences in this film, not going into spoilers, is a moment where you see very capable people murdered like in quite a brutal fashion.
I love that.
In quite a shocking way, which I don't know how very young audience members who love these characters are going to respond to that, but I was like, hell yeah, this is awesome.
And tell me about Scarlet Witch, Matthew. And we're going to see more of her in her full regalia in this. Is that a thrill to see Elizabeth Olsen like getting to her full power now?
Oh, yeah. She was in it a lot more than I was expecting. She's kind of, she's a really key character, and it does very much follow on from WandaVision. And she gets to do a kind of a few different things that she hasn't done before as well. It really does carry on that character's journey. So, yeah, I mean, it's as much a Scarlet Witch movie as a Doctor Strange one, really,
which
when
I'm,
you break it down.
I'm there for, absolutely. Yeah. Love that. And what about America? How's she doing in this? She's a new character that she's been brought in. How does she stand against these two titans of the Marvel Universe?
Yeah, she's good. I'd say she's a very sort of fun, effervescent presence in this film. Everything that's going on with Strange and Wanda is just very serious. Like, no one's joking around, really. But America just brings a bit of a lighter touch to everything that's going on, because she's this more innocent character who, she, if you don't know the character from the comics, she has this ability to create star-shaped portals, which she's able to journey through the multiverse through. But the problem with that is that she doesn't know exactly how to create these portals. They just appear when she's under duress, essentially. So it's only in moments of extreme danger that these portals suddenly appear. She's also super strong, which again is something that she can't entirely control. So it's very much a journey of her development, and she's sort of mentored a little bit by Doctor Strange. There's a little bit of that Spider-Man Strange dynamic going on, that kind of surrogate parent kind of relationship between those two, which is quite nice. And I thought they played off each other really well. I like that partnership.
So are we recommending this for people to go and see this weekend?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Matthew did a beautiful job of navigating spoilers there. which I was
sweating
say,
a bit, I'll be honest.
Exactly.
The cracks didn't go off. We're okay.
Because there are huge things that happen in this film, yeah. I would say, which we
fairly
can't...
Fairly early on as
yeah,
well,
exactly,
really.
Yeah. To the point where you think, should they really have kept this a secret? Yeah. Like, wouldn't it be better just to tell people so that they know what to expect a little better? But, you know, given that we don't want to spoil things that people, you know, we want people to discover these surprises themselves, so we won't go into it here. But
we will do next week. We will talk about all of this stuff
next
week.
But yeah, I would say purely in the sense of you don't want to be spoiled, go and check it out.
Immediately.
Before you're spoiled.
Don't look on the online. Don't look on your social. No. Just get in there.
Exactly. I enjoyed this. There's been a few sort of middling reviews. We as a publication gave it 3 stars ourselves, which is obviously not a glowing endorsement. I would say that's probably fair. I'd probably lean slightly more towards 4 stars personally. There are definitely a few problems. There are some logic issues, I would say. You'll sort of come out questioning a few things and why things had to happen the way they did. There's one key character choice which drives the whole film, essentially, which I wasn't fully on board with. Again, that's something we can get into in more detail in the spoiler special. So your mileage may vary on the treatment of this one particular character. But overall, I enjoyed it. And I love the fact that they've injected a bit of horror into the MCU as well. That this is very much a sort of different flavor. There's tons of Raimi-isms, like all the Dutch angles and the whirly derving camera and all that kind of stuff. And a certain cameo that we won't spoil, which you're probably expecting if you know Sam Raimi, which I very much enjoyed. I thought he actually did bring something to the MCU. There have been cases in the past where I think directors have lost their identity a bit.
Like Chloe Zhao.
A little bit, yeah. I thought that could have been one. But someone like Taika, obviously, is able to sort of transcend the MCU a bit and put his stamp on it. And I thought Raimi, while not quite as successful as Taika at doing that, you definitely felt like this was a Sam Raimi film, which I was overjoyed about because I love Sam Raimi and there hasn't been a Sam Raimi film in almost a decade. So I'm just glad that he's back on the screen.
Mm. Yeah. So Matthew, a 3, or you're the reviews editor. Your reviewer said 3. You agree?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. I'd probably lean more 3.5, maybe. Mm. I mean, I'm not sure how well it'll hold up on repeat viewings once you've seen all those big reveals and spoilers and twists. I will go and see it again, but yeah, I think a second viewing would be the ultimate decider. But yeah, I'd probably lean slightly more towards a 4. I'd say.
And is there a post-credit
sequence? That'd be telling, wouldn't it?
I mean, it's Marvel, of course.
Yeah,
there is.
Of course. Okay.
Stick around right
so
to the
worth
end.
Staying
there's,
for
yeah, stick around yeah. right to the end. There's one after the credits. Yeah. Okay. One in the middle, one at the end. Yeah. So stick
okay.
around.
Perfect. Okay, so that is Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness, and it's in cinemas this weekend. Get to it. Okay, so now that the multiverse is fractured, how does Moon Knight fit into it? The series came to an end this week, so what have we learned? We're about to get into it. And a warning now, there are spoilers ahead.
Hello, and welcome to Staying Awake.
I have a sleeping disorder. I can't tell the difference between my waking life and dreams.
Hello, and welcome to Staying Awake.
So Moon Knight finished.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have been watching it. I've watched a bit of it. I haven't watched the whole thing, I confess.
You were stuck in Spain.
I was in my other parallel universe. What do you want me to do? Now that we're at the end, obviously at the beginning, people were talking a lot about the different versions of Stephen and you know, his accent and all of that. Now that's all bedded in and you've got used to it and now we've come to the finale. How did it work for you? What were the takeaways and what did you love about it?
Well, Stephen Grant, number one, my true love, just awesome. It's funny how the whole focus on Moon Knight before it came out was Oscar Isaac's silly accent and Stephen Grant. And that was my favourite thing about the whole show.
You just love the way he talks.
I just love it. He's such a nice guy.
Latest gators.
Yeah, I thought Stephen Grant, he was just lovely. He's just such a lovely character. So sweet and endearing. I loved him right to the end. Not the case for the show as a whole, I have to say. Interestingly, you said before this, how does this fit into the MCU? I guess the interesting thing about Moon Knight is that it sort of doesn't. Like, it's entirely bottled. Like, it's not, there's no crossovers really with anything else outside this contained
world. Why do you think that is?
I think they just wanted to tell a specific story and didn't want the crossover pollution, if you will. They didn't want reminders of everything going on. I think it's a little tricky because you have these Egyptian gods a part of the series now. And how does that fit in with things we've seen in, like, the Eternals, where you have the Celestials that have created the universe? How does that fit in with superheroes as a whole? Like, what, we have gods in this world now? Like, how does this make sense? So it almost keeps it purer, keeps it simpler for audiences if you just siphon this off and just tell this one story, and then maybe in the future we can start crossing over and introducing different people. But I thought that was actually a fairly smart decision to keep it separate, to keep it in its separate lane. That element worked. I loved the dynamic between Steven and Mark Spector. Oscar Isaac was the total MVP of this show, as you'd probably expect, playing these dual characters. The way that they sort of bounced off each other was just brilliant throughout the whole series, I thought. I was sort of less enthralled by Ethan Hawke's villain, I have to say. We love a bit
we
of Ethan Hawke.
We do love Ethan at The Office. But...
I don't know, he just felt a tiny bit like...
Was that Ethan's fault, though, or the writing?
Definitely the writing for me. Just felt a bit cookie cutter, you know? Like, just a kind of cultish guy who just wanted to essentially enslave the world at the end of it.
Really develop over those episodes, I didn't feel.
Not really. Yeah, that was a shame. I enjoyed Khonshu. He's a good, fun character to have around. As we're talking spoilers, we can talk about Amit, who appears in the final episode. Crocodile God.
Who doesn't love a crocodile
just
god?
Just awesome. I love, there's a kind of, you all know this, Jane, but there's a giant kind of Godzilla battle in the last episode.
I'm here for it.
Giant Amit and giant Khonshu. That was cool. I love that. And I love seeing Layla kind of become her own superhero in the last episode. The Scarlet Scarab. Apparently.
A lot of Scarlet in the MCU, isn't there?
There is, yeah. I'm not aware of this character from the comics. Apparently they only appeared for a few years in, like, the late 70s and early 80s and were male, and now they've been gender swapped into a woman. Importantly, she's the first Egyptian superhero in the MCU. Big boon for representation there. I sort of enjoyed her appearance a lot. Great costume. But the show as a whole, I was really sort of back and forth on. A lot of it just felt quite rushed and a little bit cheap, which I was really surprised by for Marvel. Like, a lot of kind of ropey green screen, a lot of sort of
Do you think that's COVID, though? Is that perhaps a COVID thing?
It could be. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say. I don't know what's gone on behind the scenes precisely. It could be the TV production schedule. It could be the fact that a lot of this was shot on sound stages in Budapest rather than being shot on actual locations. I would say nowhere near as bad as Death on the Nile. Like, you can't get
that's
as bad
the
as
that.
No. And in our end of year awards, I'm sure Death on the Nile will be getting an award for their dreadful Egyptian CGI.
The Egyptian CGI here is much better. I just thought I was sort of taken aback the week I saw Doctor Strange going, these actually look like they're not on the same sort of production schedule, you know. This looks like TV as opposed to Doctor Strange, which looks like a big screen thing. Moon Knight, I wasn't totally in love with it overall, I have to say. I was just never particularly swept up in it like you often are with Marvel shows. Like, I remember just being completely invested in WandaVision and just desperate to know what happened next and being there at like 8 a.m. on a Wednesday morning when it dropped, ready to watch it. But with this, I was just like, I'll get around to it later today.
It was homework.
Yeah.
Was it homework for you, Matthew?
Yeah, to an extent, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree. It didn't feel essential. I think probably the problem for me was it started so strong. The first episode was so centered on Steven. He was such a great character. He's so lovable.
And his museum job.
Yeah, and just the contrast between him and all this kind of mystical stuff that's going on, and the character, the Moon Knight character being presented as such a badass, all that contrast. I thought it was really enjoyable and exciting, but then it did feel... It got a lot more conventional as it went on. And there was an awful lot of exposition as well. And not a huge amount of Moon Knight action in several of the episodes. He sort of felt like a side character, really.
So, do you think they're saving him for something better later on in another phase?
I'm sure they'll bring him into whatever the next incarnation of the Avengers will be. I'm sure they'll bring him into that in some form.
I mean, the interesting thing about Moon Knight is that Oscar Isaac went out of his way to only sign a contract for one season. He didn't want to be locked in for, you know,
after his X-Men experience.
Yeah, exactly. for like a 9-picture deal. So if he does come back in the form of Oscar Isaac, maybe he'll change, because I guess Moon Knight is a power set that can be transferred to other people. But if he does come back, it will be because he loves this character, I guess. The other thing that they talked about a lot about this show, in contrast to other Marvel shows, is that this was going to be Marvel's character study.
Yes.
Which I think is a bit unfair on some other Marvel films and other Marvel TV shows. Like, I don't think this is any more of a character study than, you know, the arc that Captain America had over three films and several
Avengers movies. All right, Jordan, we know how much you love Captain America.
I do love Captain America. But there is a terrific episode, sort of, I think it's episode 5 of this show, where it's basically all centered on Stephen and Mark going into their afterlife, essentially, exploring their sort of shared past together. And I thought that episode was just wonderful. Like, I thought it was a really good exploration of sort of their trauma and what happened to them. I thought it explained the sort of dissociative identity disorder thing really well. It totally made sense why this had happened to him and why Steven exists in the first place. I thought Oscar Isaac played that beautifully. But then when it got to the, again, like Matthew said, when it got to the more standard super heroics again in episode 6, I was a bit like, you big this up as this big character study, but actually it is just a bit more of a sort of generic Marvel superhero thing, which I'm not entirely complaining against, because I like that stuff. I go and watch that. I've watched everything that they've put out because I enjoy that, but did feel like if you're going to frame it as one thing, don't give us the other thing and try to pretend it's something it's not.
Yeah, it didn't feel like there were big sort of, oh my God, everybody's talking about this the next day, once it's drop moments, Matthew. Do you think were the moments not big enough for people to be really bothered about, or just did they shy away from it? I mean, it didn't feel like, you know, in WandaVision, everybody talked about it the next day. Was that just because it was the first, really?
Maybe, yeah. And with this one, it was kind of skewed towards a slightly older audience. Like, it's 16 plus on Disney, so younger viewers didn't have access to it. So perhaps that kind of limited its impact to a degree. And maybe because the character just isn't as well known. I mean, even among kind of the comic community, it's not as big a character as some of the other ones they've followed. So, I think that. And just saturation as well, I think. Perhaps that's a bit of a problem at the moment.
There is a lot to watch on everything, on all channels.
Yeah.
It's not as much of a mystery show either, in the way that WandaVision was. Like, they deliberately seeded clues in that show to get people talking, essentially. This is just a bit more straightforward. I came out thinking I probably would have preferred to see this as a film rather than a series at the end of it all, because it's only 6 episodes. It's not it's not a huge expanded narrative. Felt like with a bit, if it was told a bit more tightly, you could definitely have done this in a film, which left me sort of feeling like either put in a few more episodes and do properly develop these characters and do more interesting things with them, or go the feature film route and tell a more concise, focused story with it. The other thing we should talk about is Oscar Isaac's third personality in this show, which is obviously seeded practically from the start of the show. They've been teasing it the entire season, and they finally drop it in the post-credit scene of the last episode, which I thought was a little odd. Jake Lockley, the taxi driver, seemingly some kind of murderous psychopath, because every time that he's blacked out and appeared, everyone around him has turned up dead. Quite intrigued to see where they take that. Although, if this is a one and done thing for Oscar Isaac,
that's just a little.
Are we ever going to see Jake Lockley?
You can imagine what might happen there. But
I mean, like, people seem very excited about the fact that Jake Lockley is here now. But I have to say, I didn't like all the teasers about him, like, especially in the last episode, because there's this moment where it looks like Moon Knight's screwed. Like, this is it. Ethan Hawke's got the upper hand on him. And then he does his blackout thing, comes back, and like, Jake Lockley saved the day, basically. But you don't see any of it.
No.
But so then, like, do you think that's what they might do, like, in the if he comes back for a second season, that they might fill in the blanks?
Flashback. They could do that. It reminded me of the first scene of Game of Thrones. There's this moment where there's this big battle and Tyrion gets knocked out. wakes up and then the battle's over. And the reason they did that was because they didn't have the budget back then to be able to stage a battle. That isn't how it happens in George R. R. Martin's novel. And it just made me think, oh, like, have you just done that because you couldn't achieve this? Or
it could have been anything as stupid as like COVID regulations meant they couldn't have that many people doing close combat or something. And so maybe. It just has to be yeah. like, oh yeah, he killed everyone.
Yeah, I guess. Done. I mean, I guess it was a narrative choice because they do it a few times yeah. across the series.
Yeah.
Do you want
to see more though of a murderer?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it looks cool.
Yeah.
Like what he's done. I want to see what he's
Marvel's
done.
Taxi Driver. Yeah. That's
where
we went.
There literally, you go. Yeah. I totally would show up for that. So overall, where does this rank in the output so far of the sort of MCU TV shows?
Mm. Okay, TV shows. I mean, probably better than Falcon and Winter Soldier, but I think I prefer everything else. Mm. I mean, for me, the surprise highlight is Hawkeye of the Marvel TV shows. Like, yeah. I absolutely loved Hawkeye.
Which you weren't expecting.
Exactly. But this, it was okay. It was okay. I'm glad I watched it. It's probably worth your time if you've got 6 hours spare. But I wouldn't say it's anything particularly exceptional as far as Marvel goes.
Matthew?
Yeah, I'd probably put it fairly low down. I liked it more than Loki. I got a bit frustrated with Loki. I did prefer this and I just loved Oscar Isaac's performance.
I love Oscar Isaac in anything.
Yeah, pretty much.
So maybe I'll watch that if I get a transatlantic flight. That's 6 hours sorted.
Yeah.
Okay, so Moon Knight is still available if you want to revisit on Disney+. Right, it's time for alternative line reading, and I'm going to do this in the style of Stephen Grant. And this is a quote by somebody we've already discussed, as you know. There's something about you, something you carry, something made of gold, but far more precious.
Well, I think I know who the character is, just guessing from the line, but I'm not sure which film it's from.
Mm.
I'm guessing is it Gollum?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Is it Gandalf? Mm-mm. Is it Bilbo?
You're in the right...
Okay. In the right universe.
In the right universe.
It's got to be the Lord of the Rings verse, right? Because of the pointed precious at the end there.
Yeah. Precious.
Precious.
My precious.
Someone we've talked about. So it has to be someone from Doctor Strange or Moon Knight.
Mm.
Who from either of those franchises is in Lord of the Rings? I'm trying to think now.
Yeah.
Oh, Benedict Cumberbatch, of course. Smaug.
Yes, it is.
Of course, of course.
The gold-obsessed Smaug. And this is what it really sounds like.
There is something about you. Something you carry. Something made of gold, but far more precious. There you are, thief in the shadows.
So that's it for this week's episode. Come back next week when we'll have a spoiler cast for Doctor Strange into the multiverse. That's Into the Spider-Verse, which I flipping love and can't wait for the next one. It's Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness. There's too many...
In
the Multiverse of Madness. There's too much multiverses. Anyway, we will be doing a spoiler cast for that next week. But before we go, there is time for a listener's question. And this is, I'm trying to sort my garden out. What's your favourite movie garden?
Good time of year to be sorting your garden out.
Yes,
the weather's lovely.
Yep, get all those leaves out, put them out for the recycling. Off you go.
Yeah, I mean the sort of obvious answer here is the Secret Garden, right?
Which one?
I mean, I would actually say the remake. I thought the garden looked absolutely lovely in the remake. Lush, verdant, although I wasn't sure about all the CG planties.
The breathing plants.
Mm, mm-hmm. Yeah, they were a bit unsettling. I feel like they creeped me out a bit. Maybe I'll go for CG-less OG Secret Garden. That'd be a garden I could happily spend a Sunday afternoon with my feet up reading a copy of Total Film.
Very nice, Matthew.
Well, we were talking about Obi-Wan earlier, so I'm going to go with Naboo. It's the kind of garden planet of the Star Wars universe.
Go for a whole planet.
Yeah, the whole planet.
Okay, cool. I've got two. I'm going to go for Edward Scissorhands just because I enjoy his topiary.
Mm.
But the garden I love, in a film I love, is Atonement. And that beautiful house with that big long lawn. There's the fountain there that they have the incident with the broken pot. And then there's a lake that they go swimming in. And obviously all sorts of nefarious things happen at night. Also with Benedict Cumberbatch, so he's like a theme here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Atonement's Garden is delightful. And I wish Robbie and C could have had a happy ending, but they didn't. Mm. I love that film. Anyway, that is it from this week. So we will be saying our goodbyes and looking forward to Obi-Wan Kenobi. And we'll be back next week. So say goodbye, Jordan.
Bye.
Say goodbye, Matthew.
Laters, gators.
Laters, gators. Okay. In a while, crocodiles. See you next week.
Look here, look here. I float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. My name's Steve, with a V.